Hello and welcome to our Harmony United Psychiatric Care podcast, everyone. I am your host, Marilyn Santiago, and joining us today is Melissa Tamayo, our physician assistant and operations manager at Harmony United Psychiatric Care. How are you, Melissa?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. So, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good having been welcome back and be able to kind of discuss the next topic.
And the next topic is a controversial topic. Today, we're going to discuss about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. But guess what? It's not in children, it's in adults. So let's begin, right? So I want to understand a little bit more about ADHD in adults. I did read a little bit about it. But one of my questions is, what is actually ADHD, and can this be diagnosed as an adult, or does it have to come from childhood? How does that work?
So there's a little bit of a misconception there. I think a lot of the times there's been a lot of focus on trying to identify it early on, especially now that there's been more of a recognition for ADHD. But realistically, we can see a lot of late diagnosis in adulthood, similar issues with focus, concentration issues, some troubles with multitasking. And we don't really think about it as an adult. We think it's just, oh, it's fatigue or it's a little bit of tiredness. But it could be kind of driven from an underlying diagnosis that maybe was not addressed in their earlier age or in childhood, let's say in their case, because it wasn't necessarily something looked at back then. So nowadays, we're putting a little bit more attention to adult ADHD and kind of seeing how that's become more of an idea that this does exist. It's not just a childhood issue, and it does still affect into adulthood, and it's something that should be addressed, should be treated in order to kind of help that person maybe feel a little bit more productive or be able to do a little bit better in their schooling and their work and even their everyday life.
True. Thank you. So, how has the perception itself of adult ADHD changed in the recent years? So, probably back then, we didn't talk about it a lot, right? But now it's more, you could see it more. So, how has that changed both in the medical community and in society itself?
Yeah, I think in the medical community, there's been more attention to it of trying to figure out if there is any underlying issues with ADHD, even in the adults. A lot of the time in the past, it's been more maybe focused on is it depression? Is it fatigue or just feeling overwhelmed with the stressors of life that we understand get a little bit higher as we get into adulthood? And now seeing kind of that maybe some of these symptoms are not related just to fatigue, that it may be an underlying condition that just hasn't been essentially diagnosed. And so nowadays, I think in the medical community, when we do hear those keywords of I'm really having a hard time focusing, or I'm having trouble dealing with multiple things, or I'm not keeping up with things at home as far as chores. We're kind of thinking, okay, let's address what could be going on. Let's focus and see if there's any testing that should be done for ADHD to try to figure out if that could be something that's under kind of the scenes of what we're seeing aside of as would be potential symptoms. The other thing too is I think we've had a little bit more awareness in general in the medical community. A lot of it has come as a let's say a sequela of COVID and a lot of people having to work from home and kind of changing a lot of their routines. And we've seen a lot of these symptoms come up a lot in primary care, or even if they get to psychiatry, as something very common. And I think nowadays we're looking at testing a little bit further and not just chalking it up to fatigue or stress and that it'll be better in another month or so, or if you meditate, it'll get better. We're actually wanting to see what's underneath all of this. And what is society is a little bit different. There's always been somewhat of a stigma when it comes to ADHD. There's been that understanding that maybe it's just a lack of routine or a laziness per se. And that aspect of it, I think, has changed. Part of it also during COVID, where we're understanding that it affects more people than we think, that it is something that has, that it's a condition, that it's not just a factor of not having routine. And it's becoming more and more accepted. We're also seeing a little bit more when it comes to information on social media in regards to people that have ADHD or awareness on the symptoms of ADHD. And that's allowing to kind of get out to more and more people that information and just having them kind of self-assess or maybe assess people in their family and their close circle and letting them know, hey, this could be possibly going on, or maybe you should explore reaching out to someone to see if that's something that could be addressed or diagnosed and maybe get some help for it.
So you mentioned social media, so and it has contributed for the awareness piece. Now, I'm going to change my question a little bit. Has social media also been, because I love playing devil's advocate, right? So has social media has also contributed to that stigma, if you will, like, oh, she's got ADHD. I wonder since when. Is social media also, it's positive, right, as you mentioned, because of awareness, but is it also a negative?
It can be. I think a lot of the times it's looked in levity. They'll, you know, have memes, poke fun of it, kind of make it more minimal than what it is as far as the impact it is. And sometimes it can kind of feed into that same stigma we've had historically with it, especially in adults, of like, oh, it's a laziness factor or it's something, you know, it's just a little bit of an issue. It doesn't really affect you to that point. So as much good as it can do with kind of getting the information out there of the diagnoses, it can also deter a little bit from kind of getting a little bit of help, because it will kind of poke fun a little bit at some of the symptoms and kind of minimize its impact. So it can do both for sure.
I agree. So you mentioned some of the downsides of social media. So my question, and I'm going to change this question a little bit as well. How can an adult that has, let's say, depression, right? They think that they're depressed, but in reality, it's ADHD. How can an adult self-assess or be more conscious, right, that they do need help? How can we as adults identify the difference between ADHD and depression? Because earlier you mentioned, you know, probably a laziness or not doing your chores at home, or it could be procrastination, period, and not depression, not ADHD. So how can we as normal day-to-day people can identify, you know what, I think I do need help. I don't know if it's ADHD. I don't know if it's depression. Or I could just be not motivated for anything. Why?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a little bit of a gray area in there. Some of the symptoms do overlap, and it could be kind of a cause and effect factor that happens there. But when we look at kind of depression, there's a little bit of a global nature to it. We see some sadness. We may also see some cognitive effects, like you're a little bit more forgetful. It may be harder for you to follow through with like to-do lists, but we see a big emotional impact. And not to say that doesn't happen in ADHD, but it does shift a little bit the pertinence of it. So when it comes to ADHD, we tend to see a lot of the focus, the concentration become the biggest factor. And as a subsequent to not keeping up with those things, then you'll feel down, you'll feel anxious maybe because you didn't get to finish things. So we do see a little bit of a shift in what symptoms become maybe priority and what things are secondary in depression versus ADHD. But when you're in the middle of it and when you're dealing maybe with both depression and some underlying issues with ADHD, it's best to kind of do, you know, see a specialist or do some testing to be able to kind of differentiate a little bit what symptoms are coming from what and be able to get kind of the proper treatment from there, because there is a little bit of gray area. There's some symptoms that they do share. And like I said, not everyone is like a textbook. You know, it's not like you either have ADHD or you have depression or anxiety. You have a little mix of both based on what's going on or just situational around you.
Right. So you mentioned COVID. So how has the pandemic and the shift to remote work, remote school, remote everything, I'm not socializing at all, basically. I love the remote setting without realizing that you do need to go out there and meet people. How has all this affected the diagnosis rates of adult ADHD?
It's been huge. During the time of COVID, we saw over a 50% increase in diagnoses of ADHD. Most of it had to do with what a big impact it had on people's, what we would consider daily routines. People that would go to school on a regular basis in person to lectures now having to work from a computer in a dorm, isolated as well. People that would work in an office setting with team members are now working remote from home with a million things behind in their background, kids at home as well because they couldn't get to school. So we saw kind of a, not only a shift in routine, but also a little bit more distractions around us. And so that became, you know, a little bit of a dynamic to see that ADHD symptom become a little bit worse. We understand that we can manage our surroundings to be able to improve, you know, ADHD symptoms. But when we're put in a position that kind of isolates us and brings all the triggers, let's say, for the ADHD symptoms to light, it becomes a little bit harder to manage that and, you know, stop the distractions and really focus. So it was a huge factor and a shift in identifying adult ADHD, ADHD in general, but definitely adult ADHD, where before when you're in a very controlled environment, maybe the symptoms weren't as noticeable then, and maybe were chalked up to fatigue or tiredness, or I had a late night the night before, and that's why I maybe can't focus that great this morning.
Interesting how it works and how the common denominator, as I listen to what you're sharing with us, is the distraction piece. And the focus. So how both of them interlock together, you know, interlock for maybe a possible ADHD diagnosis. So can you explain the phenomenon that's happening of parents recognizing that they may have the ADHD symptom? Well, here I am bringing my child to the pediatrician or to the mental health to the psychiatrist or to the, you know, to the mental health office, right? And as I listen to the provider talking to my child, I'm like, oh my God, I have all those symptoms. Can you explain how that's going on? And have you seen a parent bring their child and then, hi, I'm here for me?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I could say clinically, it's something very common. We understand ADHD, there's definitely a connection on a genetic component. And well, you're 50% mom, 50% dad, and there's a likelihood if multiple children in that family have been diagnosed formally with ADHD, well, it came from somewhere, unfortunately, right? And like I said earlier on, where we're looking 20, 30, 40 years back, they weren't checking for ADHD. There was no, you know, there was no such thing as ADHD. It was just, you know, lack of motivation. It was lack of effort on part of the person. And so now when, you know, the same parents that have these children that aren't focusing, aren't concentrating, they're getting reports from school that they didn't do well or they're struggling. They're taking them in to get assessed, and they're sitting there hearing the questions being asked to the children, and they're kind of thinking, I do that too, you know, or I've always done that too. Or I remember when I was in school, those were the issues I was having as well. And you see kind of that echo in regards to the symptoms. And it starts just kind of like a light bulb, a eureka moment of like, wait, do I also have ADHD? Is that something I've been dealing with? And this isn't just like fatigue. It isn't just overstimulation. And so we see that a lot. They initially come in for the kids to get assessed, and then they themselves end up, you know, becoming also patients and realizing that maybe that's something that they have struggled with in the past, just haven't identified it and are currently struggling with everything going on. So that's something very, very common where we see kind of those parallels, those kind of comparisons between the parents and the children. I think the other portion of it too is just the nature of the amount of stress in general as a community we are in now. That stress definitely contributes, right, to anxiety, which we know can make things a lot worse when it comes to focusing. You get easily distracted. And so those people that have maybe an underlying diagnosis of ADHD really struggle and start seeing maybe more of those symptoms come up. And parents end up being a little bit more stressed in general. They're managing children that maybe are being diagnosed or trying to get treatment for ADHD. They're hearing from the schools or hearing about statewide testing that they're struggling with, that stress in themselves, and plus work stress and everything financially going on, that contributes to their own symptoms getting a little bit worse. And then we identify it kind of in those appointments with the children.
So can you give me a couple of misconceptions about adult ADHD that persist despite the increased awareness that we're actually experiencing? Because there is awareness, commercials, social media, et cetera, but there's still a misconception about adult ADHD.
Yeah, I think one of them we touched base a little bit earlier when it comes to social media. They kind of poke fun at it a little bit, almost as if it's not a real condition, or everyone has ADHD. Sometimes you'll even hear the verbiage, "Oh, my ADHD is acting up today," or I had an ADHD moment. And that, you know, taken to light heart like that, someone who really truly struggles with ADHD on a regular basis consistently, that's not the case. It's not something that just kind of happens sometimes, right? That's something that becomes a struggle, right, throughout their day and next week and month. So I think there's still a little bit of that perception of it being kind of a fake condition or something that just occasionally happens when you're tired. The other one we touched as well is just that component of it being a lack of self-motivation. You're just not a structured person. You're lazy. And that in itself is what causes the ADHD symptoms and not anything else chemically or genetically that's a component to it. Outside of that, I think there's always that perception when we look at gender that men by nature are the ones with ADHD. Women are not, because they should be socially more structured. They're the ones that are rearing the kids, you know, back then at home. And so they're able to multitask and do a million things, and men cannot. So therefore, they're the ones that can have ADHD.
Right.
And we now know across the board that's not the case. Men and women can be diagnosed with ADHD and have similar issues. So I think that's, you know, still a misconception that's out there. Not as common as the other ones, but we will see it occasionally. The other one that we do see a lot, especially when we have parents that come in with their children, there's always that fear of fault. You know, did I do something wrong to cause my child to have ADHD? Was it something I gave them to eat? Was it too much sugar? Was it something I ate during pregnancy? Was it screen time? And we realize, you know, there are definitely some dietary things that can make symptoms worse in someone with ADHD, but it's not a result of poor parenting, right? It's something that we look at with a genetic component that's a true disorder, and that wouldn't necessarily be the only cause of it. The other aspect of it, I think, and I see that a lot, I work in Gainesville, so I have a high population of college students, but their fear is if I've been diagnosed or if the testing comes back that they have ADHD, that they're not smart enough, that's it, you know, they won't be able to move forward in life, and this is a disability that's going to hinder their progress, and that's not the case. There's actually no connection between ADHD and IQ, and there's nothing diagnostically that would impede you from pursuing, you know, your studies and graduating and getting that job you want. It's just more the aspect of time management that becomes a little bit more difficult when you have ADHD, and trying to kind of structure a little bit your routine and your surroundings to modify it a bit to make it easier for you to focus and follow through with things. But it definitely does not measure your intelligence, which I know is something that a lot of people get a little bit frustrated with ADHD, or feel is going to be a long-term hindrance for them. Outside of that, I think there's been a little bit more acknowledgement of many people that are successful that have ADHD and can still manage their symptoms and pursue forward. So I think in that sense, that those are the biggest misconceptions that maybe have gotten a little bit better in regards to some of the awareness, but still persist here and there.
Do you think that the cultural background has to do with ADHD, like the normal, I don't want to say normal, but like the high blood pressure, it's more common in Hispanics and African Americans, or the diabetes in Hispanics. So ADHD, does ADHD have that as well? It's more common in XYZ culture?
Not necessarily. I think a lot of it has to do, maybe misconceptions when we look at it culturally.
Okay.
We can see, for example, I could take in the Hispanic community. Still, even today, 2024, there's that misconception of it's a laziness aspect of it, right? It's mm-hmm. unmotivating. There's been some shifts maybe for those that have been living in the U.S. for a while, but that's still, I can tell you in my family, that's still something that I wouldn't be surprised if my aunt said it, right? I think a lot of that has to do with just the misconception of it being actually looked at as a disorder versus just a choice, right? So I do think culturally there's certain dynamics that cause it to be perceived or viewed as something that it's not. And that can then influence the person dealing with ADHD because they themselves think that maybe I am lazy, I am unmotivated, and can kind of cause some of those subsequent depressions, anxieties that come with it.
That was exactly what I was going to say, because I also come from a Hispanic background, and I do remember many of my family members, the old school, right, saying, oh, that is fixed with you got to punish, you got, and I'm thinking, no, I don't think so. I don't think that's fixed that way. I think you actually have to go to the doctor. So talking about the doctor, what role does primary care play in all this? Because, yes, we already have the mental health aspect. You and I know that, right? But primary care physicians, how do they refer to mental health? Is this something they can handle from top to from start to finish for continuity of care? Because I'm sure ADHD would be considered just like a diabetes, for example, continuity of care. Because if you're medicated for ADHD, then there are measures or labs, I guess, that follows. Am I right? Am I going through the right path?
Yeah, I think when we look at primary care, their role especially is identifying and screening for ADHD.
Okay.
And not just kind of saying, oh, it's fatigue or it's stress and you have to reduce stress levels. Those things do help and do contribute maybe to some of the symptoms, but they can do specific screening. There's screening questionnaires that they can do for ADHD that give you an idea that there is a focus issue, that there is an attention issue. And then that in turn, they can utilize to figure out what the next step is. Let's say they had a patient who was complaining of these symptoms and they did a screening, one of these ADHD questionnaires, and it came up to be a likelihood, because they're not definitive, but they give you an idea of what's going on. Mm-hmm. So it came back as a likelihood of ADHD. They can follow next step. Next step would be naturally doing some labs. There's a lot of things that could be going on internally that can cause similar symptoms. So they have to kind of rule out a couple of things that would be in their realm as primary care. So thyroid issue, anemias, things that can kind of cause you to be a little bit more tired, maybe lose focus. Thyroid can cause a lot of anxiety issues, focus issues. And so it may mimic some of the symptoms of ADHD, but that's something that they can continuously kind of screen and get kind of a differential diagnosis down. Outside of that, let's say they've done the labs and everything looks fine on there and they don't see anything else that's contributive to ADHD and the screening is kind of pointing in the direction that there could be an ADHD diagnosis, then it's up to them. And I think at that point, looking at a referral. One thing that I think has changed a little bit in that sense is initially they would stop there and maybe start a medication for ADHD and not do any further testing outside of the questionnaire. That's something that's changed here recently, because then we had a lot of patients that maybe didn't have ADHD that were being put on ADHD medications. And so maybe in that sense, it wasn't as helpful for them, or we were having patients that were having issues with the medication. Nowadays, they tend to refer out to do some further testing. So cognitive testing, we call it a full neurocognitive screen. And so we can actually see where are we at with depression, where are we at with anxiety, where are we at cognitively with things like executive functioning, attention span, focus, concentration, reasoning, and be able to see if ADHD is something that is truly underneath all of these symptoms, and then pursue, starting medication appropriate to what we're seeing on that testing. I think that change has been important and has made it to where that stigma of it's in, something made up, it's overdiagnosed, which was as a result of everyone being labeled as ADHD. If the questionnaire came back that there's a potential mm-hmm. of that, I think that's helping now really narrow to those people who truly are ADHD and differentiate them from someone who's having maybe something else that can be addressed on a primary care level. And I think that referral then puts them in the right direction. They're seeing the specialty who deal with ADHD and know based on the testing what would be an appropriate measure for treatment from there. And so the patient's getting a little bit more, number one, continuous care, appropriate care, and a lot of education, because it's not only medication. A lot of it is also behavioral. When we have someone who deals with ADHD, they don't focus well. Their time management is poor. Their likelihood to keep a routine is very low. And so those are things you have to kind of relearn to do, even if you're on medication that helps you do that, because you don't, by nature, it's not something naturally you would do. So in mental health, we can at least coordinate not only the medication side of it if it's deemed necessary, but also the therapeutic, the cognitive behavioral therapy to try to structure their routine, help them get a little bit better at time management, making to-do lists, keeping agendas, things like that, that would otherwise set them up for success as far as treatment of ADHD.
So all this information, we have to continue talking about ADHD, adult ADHD. So on our next podcast, we will continue. So I want to thank you so much for your time. I also want to thank our listeners and our viewers that have tuned in today's episode. Please remember to hit the subscribe button to stay updated on all of our latest content. Please give this episode thumbs up. That's very important for us. We will greatly appreciate it. Share the video with your family and friends. Talk about it. It's a very important topic. Not only may not be just important for you, but also to share for others for awareness. Spread the word on mental health wellness. It's super important. If you have any questions, if you have any thoughts, anything you want to share, please post them in the content and the comments, I'm sorry, below. And we'd love to hear from all of you. And again, thank you all for your support, especially to our viewers and listeners. And we will catch you on the next episode. Thank you so much, Melissa, and we will talk soon.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Have a good one.
You too.